ka wauhi pala ikuna. Nyan han tu lawang ya kay radio tenga Cristo.
Listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill 90.7 FM.
Wave Farms Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Acra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Acre Broadcast Studio, and accommodations for Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wave Farms Art Park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wavefarm.org.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cochrane Media of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to Wireless Reconnaissance, Broadcast Surveillance, Transmission Art, and more Saturdays on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Adro Snyder reports in the Times Union that tender dry conditions and the fluffy white seeds of cottonwood and poplar seeds are creating wildfires in the Hudson Valley. On June 1st, there were still wildfires in Gilderland, Rotterdam, and Schenectady, accelerated by the cottonwood and poplar seeds that have blanketed the ground. John Keimer, public information officer for the Westmere Fire Department, said, and I quote, "If it ignites this snow-like material, it takes off. It's like gasoline," end quote. Little to no precipitation has fallen locally for the past 10 to 14 days, according to Brett Rathbun, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Albany. Rathburn said, and I quote, "With the combination of it being that warm and that dry for so long, any little ignition source could call for some brush fires," end quote. Rotterdam, for instance, declared a water emergency this week with a ban on all outdoor water use through the weekend. Cooler temperatures and rain are forecast locally, and John Kimer, Public Information Officer for the Westmere Fire Department, said, and I quote, "Hopefully brush season will end shortly," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul announced on June 2nd that 24 land banks across New York will receive nearly $26 million in funding to expand housing in the state. Hochul said, and I quote, "New York's land bank initiative has already allowed us to preserve, restore, and revitalize rundown properties across the state, and we are excited to be extending the opportunity this year. This program will empower local nonprofits, the people that know their communities best, to help increase home ownership while repairing the fabric of their neighborhoods," end quote. Hochul had wanted to expand affordable housing throughout New York in the state budget with a plan to add 800,000 units over the next 10 years that was shot down by the legislature. Officials are hoping the money for the land bank plan will help create or preserve 100,000 affordable homes in New York. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Mid-Hudson News reports that Ulster County-based Assemblyperson Sarah Hanna Streshta has introduced legislation aimed at Central Hudson to strengthen accountability measures against alleged wrongdoings by utilities. The Democrat Socialist from his office wants consumer utility protections during investigations that would prohibit gas, electric, telecommunications, and water companies from charging late fees or terminating service when the utility is being investigated by the State Public Service Commission. Shrestha said, and I quote, "It should not be up to them to decide when to suspend late fees when they are being investigated. We want to make sure this is guaranteed, and we also want to make sure that this is clearly communicated to the customers," end quote. Shrestha says with the legislature soon winding down that the bills won't be taken up until January. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The Debt Ceiling Bill's Climate-Killing Mountain Valley Pipeline. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. The House of Representatives passed the so-called Fiscal Responsibility Act of 2023 Wednesday night, raising the debt ceiling through January 2025 and pushing the next potential battle over federal borrowing past the next presidential election. The Senate is now considering the bill, which includes numerous provisions completely unrelated to the debt ceiling. One of these poison pills, buried on pages 95 to 98 of the 100-page must-pass legislation, fast-tracks the approval and construction of the controversial 300-plus-mile-long fracked gas Mountain Valley Pipeline, or MVP, through West Virginia and Virginia. Some estimates put the annual greenhouse gas emissions that the pipeline would enable as equivalent to 26 to 37 coal-fired power plants. The MVP has provoked a diverse array of opponents, from 350.org and the Sierra Club to indigenous tribes and local farmers. One of those farmers is Maury Johnson, whose organic farm in southern West Virginia has already been impacted by the Mountain Valley Pipeline. He's a member of POWER, the Protect Our Water Heritage Rights Coalition.
We have been telling the people permitting this and the people building this for 8 years that they can't build this pipeline and follow the law. And it's been proven in court numerous times. So they just want to circumvent the law.
Maury Johnson said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour, Johnson blames the debt ceiling bill's MVP provision on the pipeline's biggest congressional champion, West Virginia conservative Democratic Senator Joe Manchin. Manchin, who's earned millions from his family-owned coal business and is Congress's largest recipient of fossil fuel industry contributions, has used his leverage in the narrowly divided Senate to force the MVP into this bill.
We have documented many things all along the pipeline path, from the very beginning in northern West Virginia and Mobley, across some very steep slopes, so the steepest that's probably ever been crossed in Appalachia.
Johnson added, describing some of the risks posed by the MVP.
We're in an earthquake zone, one of the most active earthquake zones in the East, and we have actually had some minor earthquakes during the construction of this pipeline. We know that the methane that leaks all along the pipeline is harmful to the climate. It's already impacted a lot of people's water, including my own. I actually have not been able to use my water since 2021.
The debt ceiling bill also imposes jurisdiction stripping, forcing any court challenge lodged against the MVP into the traditionally pro-business federal appeals court in Washington, D.C. It further ensures more people will have their private property appropriated by the MVP corporation through eminent domain. This, in particular, has incensed Democratic Virginia Senator Tim Kaine.
I'm insisting on an amendment to strip out approving the Mountain Valley Pipeline.
Senator Kaine said after the bill's passage in the House on MSNBC.
This is a pipeline that should have to go through normal permitting processes. But sadly, the deal that was struck gives this a green light, exempts it from all the normal permitting processes. And to build a pipeline, you got to take people's land. This runs through Appalachian Virginia, some of my poorest, hardest hit residents. They don't want to have their land taken, and they definitely don't want Congress putting our thumb on the scale to take away the power of agencies and courts to review whether it's a good idea or not.
Despite Senator Kaine's palpable anger over the MVP provision and the power of a single senator to slow down or kill a bill, it appears poised to pass the Senate and be signed into law by President Biden. If passed, the law would compel the Secretary of the Army to issue all necessary permits to build and operate the Mountain Valley Pipeline within 21 days. Court challenges are continuing, and just last week, the MVP's preferred court, the D.C. Court of Appeals, ruled in favor of the Sierra Club and others on a procedural permitting issue. Organic farmer Maury Johnson and thousands of his allies aren't waiting for the courts or the Senate to stop the pipeline. This month, a broad coalition is launching a wave of protests nationally starting at the White House on June 8th to, quote, turn up the heat and make Biden take real climate action by ending the era of fossil fuels, unquote. In addition to finally shutting down the MVP, activists are demanding that the Biden administration reverse its approval of the Willow oil drilling project in Alaska and stop issuing any more permits for petroleum exploration and extraction on public lands and waters.
I'm what a sacrifice looks like.
Again, Maury Johnson.
If this deal goes through, this dirty deal of Joe Manchin's pet project, Mountain Valley Pipeline, everybody in America needs to look in the mirror and say, I can be sacrificed also.
I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill.
On June 4th, immigrant rights advocates and legislative supporters gathered at the state capitol to call for passage of the New York for All law, which would prohibit local law enforcement and state agencies from working with the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. We hear from Murad Awada of the New York Immigration Coalition, Senator Gonatas, and Assemblymember Tony Simone. Damian Gonzalez of Alianza Agricola, Julie Dragonetti of the Worker Justice Center, and Assemblymember Sarahana Shrezda.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Murad Ouada. I'm the executive director of the New York Immigration Coalition. Today, we're here coming together to demand the passage of the New York for All Act, a bill that would bar local law enforcement and state agencies from colluding with immigration enforcement and separating our families here in New York. We have the votes in the Senate and the support in the Assembly. So today, we're calling on our legislative leaders to bring New York for All to the floor and let our voices be heard. Our immigrant neighbors deserve to feel safe in their communities, but as it stands now, in places across New York, something as simple as a traffic stop can lead to your family's separation. I want to introduce our champion. Join me in welcoming Senator Andrew Gonardis.
We have 4 days to go before Albany wraps up its work for the legislative session, and there is no reason why we cannot pass a very simple and basic law that would protect our most vulnerable immigrant communities across the state. We know that when local law enforcement and local governments collude and conspire with ICE, that does nothing to make our community safe. That does nothing to keep families together. That does nothing to allow people to live with dignity in their homes, in their neighborhoods, build a life with their families. It actually does the opposite. There's no reason why a traffic stop should lead to your deportation. There's no reason why a family should live in fear of going to a public library or going to a parent-teacher conference or having to go to a police station to ask for help, God forbid, and then worry about the risk of being deported just because of their immigration status. That's not the way we do things here in New York. And another thing, we are seeing what's happening across this country right now when there is a right-wing effort to disenfranchise and marginalize and demonize immigrant communities and immigrant populations. We see what is happening in Florida right now, where Governor DeSantis passed the most anti-immigrant bill in this country currently. We have an opportunity to do it differently here in New York. We can lead with love instead of retreating with fear. And that's what New York is all about. We have 4 days to get this done. I'm so thankful to everyone who came up here today. You should not have to be here, but the reality is this won't get done unless you're up here. Okay? Because if you don't give a damn about politics, it's not going to give a damn about you. So we have to get this done. I'm committed to getting this done. Our assembly is committed to getting this done. Now we have to make it happen. So thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, Senator. Next up, join me in welcoming another champion of ours, Assemblymember Tony Simone.
Thank you. Thank you to the immigrant rights Batman here with his cape. I'm Tony Simone. I represent the west side of Manhattan. I was raised by immigrant Peruvian mom. Our cousin was deported in that draconian state we call Florida right now, under DeSantis. And it's a crime that you go after our immigrant Americans and New Yorkers because Congress failed to pass comprehensive immigration reform. Stopping someone, giving a ticket at a stoplight, going after these immigrant families. They do the work many of our other New Yorkers won't do. They feed us. They house us. They are part of our community. We must pass the New Yorkers for All Act. Our country should be opening open arms to all immigrants. New York is a foundation of immigrants from around the world. We need to, once at last, stop criminalizing all these folks coming from nations where things are falling apart to our great nation, New York. We need them. There's a labor shortage. We need our immigrant communities to feel safe, and ICE must be taken out of the equation. Stop criminalizing immigration, pass immigration reform, and pass this great bill by my colleague in the Senate, Gonardis, to make sure that all immigrants feel safe and have a full life. I ran for that, to have a New York for everyone, including our immigrant New Yorkers.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Damian Gonzalez. I am a member of Alianza Agricola. I've been a worker for over 17 years in this country. I am here today to speak on behalf of my colleagues and other workers who constantly live in fear and our community that has immigrated outside of their country in order to find a better opportunity. We immigrants are here and live in constant fear and vigilance in an attempt to make sure that we are not deported from this country due to the collusion between police and immigration. Ooh. Today to ask that all our legislators who have not had a need or necessity to travel to a different country where the laws are different, where the language is not known, to think about the fear that one might experience as they are living in this country and working for their family. We are in a strange country without the resources that we need out of necessity. I ask that you all think about the need that we face in terms of being able to reach our community and participate. We are here, we are working, we are attempting to make a better life for ourselves and for our families. And I'm also here to speak for my coworkers and my colleagues and my neighbors who unfortunately, as a result to police and immigration collusion, have left their families behind and have been deported back into dangerous situations. I ask that everyone, that our legislators listen to not just me, but all of us here and think about New York State's economy and the workers that work here.
It's Julie Dragonetti, and I am an organizer with Worker Justice Center of New York in Rochester. The Worker Justice Center serves the whole state of New York outside of the five boroughs. We largely work with immigrant farm workers who live in rural areas and are so often forced to live in the shadows. Farm workers often live in housing located on the farm where they work, and in these rural communities, there is limited access to basic resources such as grocery stores or healthcare facilities. When the Green Light Law passed in 2019, giving undocumented New Yorkers access to driver's licenses, this opened up a number of possibilities for workers in rural areas who previously had to risk getting on the road without a license or paying hefty prices for raiteros to take them where they needed to go. However, without New York for all, the ability to move freely still remains elusive, and the ever-present fear of an encounter with immigration enforcement remains. Farm workers face isolation, lack of community, and labor exploitation due to this fear that leads them to infrequently venture out from the property where they work and live. This isolation and fear is especially palpable for survivors of violence and exploitation who feel they have nowhere to turn to seek safety. After all, how could we expect someone to turn to the police for help when they themselves could then be at risk of detention or deportation? At the Worker Justice Center, we work every day with courageous individuals who have taken a risk by standing up to injustice, whether they experienced wage theft, workplace or domestic violence, or even labor trafficking. It is often extremely difficult to convince clients to report these crimes to the police because of this ever-present fear. And we know that there are still more workers we have not yet reached who do not speak up against abuse or injustice because of their immigration status. No one should be scared into silence. Immigrants are our neighbors and community members in upstate New York. In the words of a member of Mujeres Divinas, a local farm worker, woman-led organization, I ask, please, no more police working with immigration. I ask that our representatives lead with their hearts and think a little bit about us. We are honest workers. We don't want to cause any harm to this country. We love this country because thanks to the opportunity to work that we can help our family to eat and go to the doctor. No more polymigra. Pass New York for all.
We next hear from Assemblymember Sarah Hanna Shrestha from the New Paltz area.
I myself moved here as an immigrant, and even though I moved here with a lot of support and a clear plan of what I was going to do, it was still one of the most terrifying experiences. It is already very traumatic to leave your home, to find yourself situated in a new place where you have to build a new relationship, where you have to figure out what your support network is going to be in the absence of all of the people you've known all your life. And we don't really need to make it all the more worse by terrifying people who come to this country with the law enforcement we have and with all of the officials we have with ICE. It is a very traumatic experience, and we really should be doing our part to make sure that people feel safe. Right now in the Hudson Valley, there is a lot of division over asylum seekers coming in, and I've seen the really nasty rhetoric unfold. I've seen people being targeted based on false media stories. And we really need to stand up as New York as a place where a lot of possibilities exist that don't exist in other parts of the world. And we need to show our leadership, and we need to show our idea and our vision of the sort of kindness and compassion that we want to see in our society. So
this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
You every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady. Oh, who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall.
Bria Barthel for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and I'm here with an important message from Natasha Pernica of the Food Pantries for the Capital District. Natasha, in my email today, I got a video from you about the challenges the food pantries are facing. Tell us a little bit about that.
I would love to, and thank you so much for having me today. Unfortunately, we all know that food is a basic need, and it's been very challenging since COVID. However, hunger didn't stop when the COVID emergency ended. In fact, here in New York's Capital Region, as a coalition of nearly 70 food pantries, first quarter already, we're seeing a 30% increase in community need. We're seeing people who have never had to turn to food pantries before, people who have children and both parents are working. We've had seniors coming because their SNAP benefits have been decreased. We're really in a difficult situation right now.
When you say SNAP, I think people know that that's the replacement for food stamps. One of the things that I thought was interesting was the difference between the emergency needs in the past and the regular supplement because of the financial challenges people face.
People use food pantries because they don't have enough resources, and food pantries provide groceries. You're coming away with a minimum of 3 days worth of food. Some pantries do more than that. And it's based on the MyPlate model. So you're getting proteins, grains, fruits and vegetables, dairy. Some people turn to food pantries for a short-term crisis. They got laid off, their car broke down, and they have very limited resources. So they're helping to get through. Other people turn to food pantries every month because they just don't have sustainable resources. And so every month, the food pantries help them get by. And we're now seeing more and more people not being able to get by on a monthly basis.
You mentioned the COVID changes. That happened at both the individual level of the end of the COVID bump in SNAP benefits, but also at a higher level of the end of support for food banks.
Yeah. So unfortunately, while food pantries, not just in the Capital District, but across the state of New York, are experiencing extreme increases, the COVID emergency ended, which means there's less free food coming from federal through the food bank system as there was during COVID. Most of the food that pantries have to acquire from the food bank, there's a cost associated with it. So costs are going up for food pantries because not only do food pantries acquire food at the food banks, but they also have to turn to grocery stores. Sometimes it can be cheaper to get things on sale at a grocery store. And we also have inventory challenges in the supply chain still. So everything that food pantries want to distribute out to the community is not always available. So we have less federal funding coming through to the food bank system as during COVID. We also have less state funding coming through to food pantries. And while in the state budget, the two programs that fund food for our charitable food system, both the food banks and food pantries, Nourish New York and HPNAP, the Hunger Prevention Nutrition Assistance Program through Department of Health. They're both incredible programs to help pantries and food banks buy for food. However, with food inflation being at even 10% for a lot of the pantry staple items, this flat funded budget is actually at an $8 million net loss if you take into consideration inflation over last year. So pantries are basically having to do more with less resources. I mean, you know, when you go to the grocery store, food prices are still high. And the food prices are not high because the companies have a need. I recently saw an article that said the four major food corporations in America are actually seeing billions of dollars record profits right now. It's honestly very disturbing. So we've got basically everything working against